The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, this is Adam Fields, Midnight 27 Studios owner and creator of the comic book series Prowl. You are listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 327. I hope all is well with you and your friends and your family, and I'd like to thank you for checking out this installment of the PVD Cast. Movies are going to be the focal point for this episode, and my guest is Thomas Angeletti. Now, Thomas is a local photographer and videographer, and he also is a movie maker. In fact, just a few weeks ago, he had a Kickstarter going on for his new project, Perdition, which is a full-length film. And I mention that because one of the things I learned about while talking to Thomas was this idea of microfilms. And what I mean by that are very, very short, little, I want to say, like TikTok-like movies that Thomas has been dabbling in. And I was absolutely blown away by that and really didn't even know that that was a thing. So you're going to learn a lot about filmmaking. You're going to hear about how Thomas got started in the biz. We're even going to talk about hockey because he's a huge hockey fan. So we talk a little bit about the Jackets and a little bit about the LA Kings, two of his favorite teams. It's going to be an awesome episode, and I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to take care of my sponsorship plug real quick, and then you're going to hear my conversation with Thomas. And of course, when I'm talking about sponsorships, I'm talking about the greatest comic book store in all the land. I mean, folks, it's in its title, World's Greatest Comics. They are located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they've got everything you need for your comic book fandom. They've got single issues, graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, collectibles, hundreds and hundreds of back issues, a great staff, awesome pool system. I mean, they got it covered. They got it on lockdown, as the kids say. Okay, I don't really know if the kids say that. I think they do. I'm not sure. Anywho, don't listen to me and my drivel. Check it out for yourself. Go over to the store. As I mentioned, 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio is their street address. But you can also check them out online. WGComics.com is their great website. And they're even on Facebook. Check them out at WG Comics. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Thomas Angeletti as we talk all about movie making. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting down this evening with Thomas Angeletti. Thomas, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's awesome to be here.
You doing all right tonight? You doing good?
Yeah, doing pretty good. It's been a crazy week already, and it's Tuesday, I think. it's one of those weeks, kind of a blur, you know?
But, I understand.
Yeah,
I understand.
How about yourself? You doing good?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. Can't complain. Just living life, man. Weather finally got nice out, and I enjoyed some outdoor yard work today, so all's good.
Always a good time.
Indeed. Well, you are a photographer and a videographer and also the driving force behind Alsem Films. So let's kick things off and just tell us a little bit about what is Alsem Films.
So basically, I wanted to do something different with film, right? I was really... being a photographer at first and foremost, and then kind of like videography, seeing the attention span, I'll say, of people getting very short is kind of hard to make like really good movies, right? Especially short films, right? Because it's almost like a short film isn't too short, or it's not short enough, I guess I would say nowadays. Because like you watch something on TikTok or like an Instagram reel, like they got you for 15 seconds, right? I have 15 to 30 seconds to really grab this person, right? Or get their attention to make them watch maybe a minute, but then they're going to fall off because it's so easy to like scroll to the next thing, scroll to the next thing. Our technology's made us so like, I guess I don't even know how to even explain it. Like the impact isn't there like it used to, like music, like TV, anything. Like you'd sit down and listen to a record, it'd just be like the greatest thing in the world. But now you could just skip through 16 songs in a matter of seconds. And like, you have to really grab somebody. Same thing with pictures, right? We used to like see prints of pictures in coffee shops. I mean, you still do, but like back in the day, or like film, right? You'd see this beautiful picture of this mountain, but now you see 15 pictures of the same mountain. You see the same thing. So I really wanted to try something different. So what we're aiming towards is trying to do super short, what they call now micro films, is what we're really trying to aim at, like 1 minute films, or at least like 2 minute films or 3 minute films broken into like 1 minute series of films. That's what we're working on now. We actually released two of them. We're working on our third one now with some special effects called Extended Warranty. It's going to be a really good one, but really just wanted to not do like a 5 to 10 minute movie. I mean, we still do those, of course, passion projects and such, but really try to get these micro films down to where you could grab somebody's attention for a minute and then like, oh crap, where's the next one at? Where's the next one at? Where, you know, wait, they didn't finish this. Let's try to look, where's the other one at, you know, instead of watching this for 5 minutes. And like, you sit there, like I'll be sitting there with somebody else. I'm like, look at the cinematography on that. You see that pull, that angle that took three people to pull. Like somebody don't really care about that. Like they just want to see the theatrics. They want to see, and it's a good thing and a bad thing at the same sense. Kind of like, you know, you talk about wrestling a lot. You did a lot of stuff with wrestling. Sometimes, you know, they want to see the jump off the top rope, but not always exactly what it took to get to the top rope. That guy had to do a lot of exercise. He got to do a lot of things to be able to make that feat. Just, you know, if you or I jumped off the top rope a few times, it probably wouldn't get back up. I wouldn't anyway, but that's kind of a long-winded thing about what I'm trying to do as far as like the media aspect and as far as filmmaking. So
it's got to be daunting to try to make a film in a minute. That blew my mind when you were talking about the time increments. I don't know. It may be because I'm long-winded. I don't know. But to me, that just seems like damn near impossible almost.
I've been following a lot of like different directors and stuff and screenwriters and stuff. And like basically knocking it down to who's our story about, what do they want, who's stopping them from getting it, and how do they get it or how do they not get it? Like the simplest terms, I saw it on Studio Binder. It's excellent. YouTube channel, if you're ever interested, or any of your viewers, it's basically about how to make movies. They go through shot lists. They tell you what, you know, different cameras do, what different focal lengths, you know, give you when you're doing a shot. It's really cool stuff. But there's a director, I wish I could give him credit, that was talking about this, like the most simplistic form of like how to tell a story. So I'm like, okay, we could kind of work with that, because what happens is like you get this cool story, kind of like what you originally found me about, which is Perdition, my full length, which is basically, that was a micro film that really just didn't work out because our special effects artist and the rest of the team kind of didn't see eye to eye. So, and we took so much time to film this, getting people to the location, because what we don't really see or talk about is how the logistics of a film or like a wrestling production work. I mean, you got to get people in. They all got to schedule the same day. You got to have this person here. You got to have this person right here. And if this person's right here, hopefully that person can walk over there and do what he did. And it's a lot of that, right? So we had people coming from Cleveland, Cincinnati, and the one actress was in LA at the time. And then she came over to Columbus for 2 days. Right. And she was only here for 2 days. We only had her for 4 hours. So we shot this movie and it was just wasn't worth its grain of salt as compared to like what we wanted to do. So I'm like, okay, now we have to replan this, because the one actress travels all around the world. She's in I want to say Belgium right now. She's in Europe. Like every other day, she's somewhere else. Her name's Michelle Carney. She's a model and an actress on Instagram at Michelle Carney. Just an amazing person. But so we only had her for 4 hours and it didn't work out. So it's like, okay, now that we have to wait for her to come back to Columbus, because that was in September of last year, she can't come back until March. Instead of just sitting on this and letting it go to the wayside, and instead of, you know, just forgetting about it, let's just actually like attempt to make a whole movie. Because everything I've done up until that point was like 5-minute horror movies and these micro movies. Like, let's try to make a full length movie. And that's where you saw us on the Kickstarter, and that's how that all came about. So now we're 3 scenes away from finishing that up.
So what's the timetable for finishing that up? Is it sometime this month or within the next couple of months?
I'm hoping this month. We're having an issue securing a church. Like, the outside, like, it is unbelievably hard to film in like on the outside of a church. I'm not even trying to go into a church, just film at the doors. And we have emailed several churches and been told no. Several. Even if we say we're going to donate money, like, we are donating money to the church. Just let us stand on the steps. And this scene literally takes 15 minutes. I mean, obviously, like, getting there, it's probably about a half hour, right? Because you got to get the microphone boom up. You got to get the guy with the audio and then camera and then the actors and actresses. 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. We've been unable. Like, we finally just now secured a church after looking for a month.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're 3 scenes away. I'm really excited about it just to get it done. Everything that literally could have gone wrong during this movie. So I just to see it come to fruition is going to be amazing.
Well, let's talk about another film that you posted about online. Tell us a little bit about Manifest.
Yeah. So that was really just my girlfriend and her friend messing around. We actually were talking about filming a movie in a coffee shop, and we like drew it all out and we're storyboarding and we're like, hey, we got to do something later on today. Just, you know, it's too nice out. Got to get the camera out. And we kind of just filmed this little short film about, you know, somebody being really sad. And then it's kind of like ethereal, you know, where she sees a mirror and kind of sees herself and sees the best in herself. And then the color grade changes where it's all like happy and stuff. And then they go off into the world. We kind of shot that the same way, because that was my first attempt at not doing something horror, which was actually kind of nice, because like the post effects stuff is what takes forever. Like, this movie that we're working on now is literally like 3 minutes, and 27 seconds of it is post effects that has taken 2 hours to do, and the rest of the movie is going to be like 5 minutes of just putting clips together with audio. So it was definitely nice to not have to do that, you know, just like get out in the field and like, okay, we're going to do this. You're going to do this. We're going to walk this way. Like, nobody's going to stab anybody. Nothing's going to go black. There's not going to be nothing wrong. So, but we tried it in that same kind of sense, right? Where it was like a 2-minute movie, but it was cut in 1-minute increments. It was really just these first couple, because we did another one in a house where a cat was a killer. It's on there as well. We didn't really name it, but it was just literally our cat Puffy is a mass murderer cat now. But just in this way where it's just, you could, and I wanted to put it on like on TikTok and then an Instagram reel and then on Facebook and then like a YouTube short and see kind of how it's going to do. And it's kind of weird how like the first one or the second one of the two will do super high, super good numbers, and the other one's like a fraction of that. So I'm just kind of testing the kitchen, so to speak, to see what's sticking and what's not. But the real story behind Manifest was just us messing around. We're actually working on another movie idea. It's going to be much longer, and that just kind of came from messing around. So,
okay, you want to talk about that other project? What's the
not
title
yet?
Of it?
Not even yet? Ready.
Okay, yeah. Not even ready. Not even okay,
ready. maybe the next time we talk, it'll be
okay. You got ready. It. You got it. So, why do you deal predominantly with the genre of horror? I assume because you're a fan of horror movies.
Yeah, I grew up watching them. Grew up loving them. I just think that the old 80s movies were just so amazing, and to see what we could do now and what they did with what they had back then is just phenomenal. I mean, we're still remaking these movies today. Mm-hmm. Every single chance somebody's now, they're making like Well, it was like 3D movies. Everybody's making Night of Living Dead 3D, Dawn of the Dead 3D, and this 3D. But after that, the whole TVs didn't really work out. Now they're now they're trying to make like animated versions of these movies and miniseries. And it's just, I grew up watching that stuff. It just, I don't know, man. It's just, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like scaring people, like just feeling that fear. Like, I love comedies. I love, you know, I'm Italian. I love freaking mob movies, you know, Godfather, Goodfellas, all that stuff.
Do you have a favorite horror film that you just love to no end?
Ah, man, we'd be here for 4 hours.
Okay. Okay.
What about you?
Jaws. Just,
yeah, really?
Yeah, just for me, it's my favorite because, like, to me, I like that idea of the subtleness of the terror. Like, for me, never was a big fan of, like, Friday the 13th. Wasn't a big fan of that franchise. Yeah, the slasher stuff never, to me. Like, I wanted something, because you didn't know when the Jaws was coming, but you didn't know when, you know? Yeah. And to me, that is awesome. I mean, I also like the original Halloween as well, because, again, there was always that tension being built. And I think that's what I enjoy more, is just having that type of feeling of not knowing what's going to happen next. So I think those, if I had to name a third one to round it out, I'd probably go with Audition.
Really?
Yeah. Cause that one's nice. Just a mind trip as well as being freaky.
I would say, like, mine of all the newer movies, I would say Midsommar is probably my favorite horror movie, like of new stuff, because that movie's terrifying, and it's just like super weird. And the fact that it's like horror in the middle of the day, because like most of that movie is like in the day, you know, they didn't film it at night, because it's easy to like film horror movies at night, right? Because you have the people are scared of the dark, you have shadows to play with, angles, you could do stuff in the background. But like Midsommar, there was nowhere to hide. It was like an open field and all these houses, and I just thought it was beautifully filmed. They made another movie called Hereditary, which is even more messed up, which is excellent.
Yes, I've heard very good things about both those films. I have not seen either one of them.
They're awesome.
I'll put them on the list.
Yeah, you got to sit down and watch them. It's not one of those ones that you can like be cooking or, you know, working on your podcast or like writing down things. So you got to sit down and watch it, because if you miss like, it's one of those movies, you miss a couple minutes, you're like, what just happened? That makes no sense how we got here. But I really do want to work on more of like psychological movies, because like you said, I do like that subtleness, like of being scared as opposed to like, you know, somebody's on the other end of the wall or the other side of the mall with like an axe. Like,
yeah,
it just really doesn't do anything for you. And that's kind of like, Alsem really is an old word in pathology. That's, it's restless or like disquietness in a sick person. Like the sick person who's sitting there like shaking or like looking around, that's panicking and paranoid. That's really what that word comes from.
Okay. Which is cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about you. Were you always a creative person? Like when you were a kid, were you always dabbling in some type of artistic endeavor?
Yeah, I started playing guitar probably about 9 or 10. And I was playing death metal and metal, rock and roll. Kind of, you know, it all kind of goes hand in hand, I guess. I played in country bands. I did play in bluegrass bands. And then kind of started like, I can't live on ramen noodles all my life. Because, you know, it's the thing. You don't have to be really good. You can be really good. You can be really bad. And it's just a stroke of, you know, luck and talent and all the combination. So started working normal job stuff. I was touring like the Midwest and stuff in a death metal band. I played in a country band. Then I actually started a cooking show.
Really?
With an old buddy of mine, called Hill Grillies. And we did like a cell phone, like this little cell phone gimbal, and it was terrible. And then another friend of mine had like a video camera, and he like come up like, we're gonna put this stuff on YouTube, we're actually gonna like film it, right? So I went out and bought a Sony 6500 camera, $1,500 camera, didn't even know how to turn it on, didn't know how to put the lens on. I'm like, I'll buy one, you have one. Now we have two cameras for the show. Didn't know nothing about it. And literally like just like filming the process, like writing shows, doing the whole production and stuff. I'm like, this is actually like super dope. Like I'm really having a good time doing this. And then you know, he did photography and videography, and he's like, hey man, you want to help me out with this? You want to help me out with this? You want to help me? And I kind of just like spun out of control and did photography for 3 or 4 years. And now I'm here. I always did like videography, but not cinematography. And the difference is real critical. I think they're kind of meshed around the same thing. And I don't know who said this, but I think it's best explained how he said it. A videographer films the world around him, but a cinematographer creates the world that he films.
Oh, that's okay. I can get behind that. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, because, you know, the lighting, right? The expression, the tones, the audio is all super thought out when you're a cinematographer. And I'm not saying videographer is not talented and stuff. Obviously, there's great videographers out there. I could still consider myself one, more than a cinematographer at this point. But, you know, just the extra very subtle things that go into making a great shot as opposed to a really good shot. That's the difference.
Okay. You know, to me, it always seems that, like, especially with photography, it's very, very technical because of, you know, using your lenses and your aperture and all that jazz. Is there like one skill that still somewhat stumps you every once in a while?
Right now, well, recently I went from a Sony camera, which is all automatic, everything, autofocus, mainly autofocus, and what's called IBIS or in-body stabilization. Basically, you can move the camera. It's kind of like the difference between a joystick and a mouse, right? If you move your joystick on an Xbox or something, it pretty much goes like this, right? It doesn't go like this. Well, as a mouse, if you go this way, you're doing this. So I switched from a Sony ecosystem to a Blackmagic camera, which is no autofocus, no image stabilization, no nothing. Like, you are responsible for 100% of that shot, right? And I guess learning to control that without a gimbal, because obviously you can use a gimbal, and I have a gimbal, but not every shot calls for a gimbal. You know what I mean? Like, a lot, especially horror movies or action movies, you need that handheld kind of human element, right, to a head. Like, I don't want to see, nobody's head perfectly does this when you're in the middle of an action sequence or any kind of like any sequence, really. It kind of moves around, right? So I was like, I need to nail how to control this camera being no auto anything. No, because what if you jerk it this way or this way, like, you actually see the camera. It's not so much like this. And then focus, right? You do what's called focus peaking, which it'll put the subject in like a red haze or like a yellow haze or a white haze. You can choose a color. And then when you turn the focus, you'll see it turn red in front of them or behind them, like however you're turning it, right? So you have to keep that focus, or the person in that peaking, or that whatever color you choose. I choose red. But when they move, right, you have to make sure you're pulling that focus. Now, like on major motion pictures, they have a guy that's dedicated with a device that wirelessly pulls the thing. But when it's you, you're doing it all by yourself and watching this guy and watching this guy and watching this guy and watching the scene all at the same time. So that really kind of, for the first couple of months, threw me through a loop. I was filming lots of dumb stuff for a long period of time. If you go to my Instagram, you'll see it. Mostly it's cooking or my cat or behind the scenes of different photo shoots and stuff. And it probably, people are just like, why does he keep filming all this stuff? But it's like, really, to get used to running this camera, so when we do films and such, I can be good about it. Because literally what happened was, I bought this camera and I'm like, my next film is going to have this camera. But then in the middle of this film, one of my cameras, this guy right here, died right on set mid shot. So I'm like, now I got to put this camera in now. It's like putting like a quarterback in, or like a pitcher who's not ready. You know, you got to throw them in. It's like, well, good luck. You got to win us this game. But so yeah, that's probably been my biggest hurdle right now. Well, just now overcoming, but yeah.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Thomas for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. Maybe you're new to town and you need a comic book store to call your own where you can go and sign up for a pool system, get your books so you never miss an issue. Well, if that's on your mind, World's Greatest Comics got one of the greatest pool systems around. They also have single issues, graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. Just stop by the store and check it out for yourself. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And you can even check them out online. Their website is wgcomics.com, or you can find them on Facebook. Just search for WG Comics and let them know that you heard about the store from me right here on the PVD cast.
Okay, well, let's chat a little bit, because on your website, you're talking about, you had posted about that there's going to be a model and creator development class that you were thinking about putting together. So talk to us a little bit about that. What does that mean? What will it entail? When does it start? Who is a perfect person to come to take those classes? Just fill us in, Thomas, on that.
Okay, so on the photography side, I do a lot of like commercial work and editorial work. Not so much now, the last couple months, because we've been working on the movie, but before that, definitely like all the time. And it's basically working with models who are trying to do commercial work, like they're trying to do modeling to sell products, right? Or to sell places like coffee shops, have maybe like, or even like a coffee mug, or like we did a thing with Arizona Green Tea, did a thing with Bang Energy Drinks, just like sort of stuff like that. And I always get asked questions, like especially we were at a meetup on Sunday, which basically that means a bunch of people just get together and they all take photos of each other, right? And it's good experience and it's fun. It's nice to meet people, network with people, because you never know who knows whomever. But you always get asked questions like, how, what do I, and the main questions, what do I do with my hands? Like when a model, like, what do they do? Because it, like, it's a hard thing, because like, if they're not holding on to something, they don't have like a purse or a pair of sunglasses or anything like that, they don't know what to do. They put them off to the side and it looks more awkward, or they put it on their face and it looks kind of weird, because you got to know how to touch your face, as weird as that sounds, or like angles of their elbows or stuff like that. So it's little things like that that I picked up working with different other photographers, different other models, places I've been, experiences I've done. I usually do these for those kind of models that are looking to get into the industry or looking to just get better overall or improve their skill set. And then on the flip side, we just stuff with photographers. Well, we'll have a group shoot. We'll have like a model come in and have everybody take turns shooting her, doing different angles, different setups and such like that. So we usually do one at a time, because I tried to do the same, like both of them at the same time, and it was complete chaos. But yeah, so it's basically, if you're a photographer, the workshop like that would be, you're just now getting into photography, or you just feel like you've hit a plateau, right? You feel like you're saying, like, you know, you got the right camera, you got the right lens, but you're just not getting the shots that you want. It's that hurdle, just how I overcame my hurdle running, you know, a camera with no autofocus and no in-body stabilization. Same thing like photography, you know, just running over those hurdles. And it's just basically like, hey, how can we help? What can I make a topic about? And we do YouTube videos on it sometimes about like different aspects of photography, getting the proper white balance, getting the proper lighting, because obviously without light, nothing works. You can have the greatest camera in the world, and if you can't light, somebody with an iPhone is going to beat you every day.
Yep.
If they can light. So a lot of little stuff like that.
So when does these classes kick off?
I'm hoping the summer.
Okay. Because
the goal is to have perdition done by the end of the month. Knock on wood, I don't have any, but knock on wood that it gets done at the end of the month, and we can start post-production, because we already got some of the movie already edited, so shouldn't be too long, and then get that out in the summer. But while that's going on, we could do more photo shoots and stuff like that.
Okay. If I may ask, who are some of your inspirations when you are on a set, either doing a movie or when you're out doing photography? Do you have inspirations?
Yeah, as far as like movies, it would be directors. And this is going to, it would be, I would say Martin Scorsese is a huge, like a huge influence of mine, because like how he emulates his life in his films through somebody else's eyes, but they're really his eyes. You know what I mean? Like Goodfellas, for instance, that was like his influence of him growing up at that time. And then they just did the one, The Irishman, the guy who supposedly killed Jimmy Hoffa.
Mm-hmm.
That was literally like 3 and some odd hours, but like you can't, like I can't stop watching those movies, like, but so like just how he could tell a story is huge. And like a new guy would probably be James Wan, who did a lot of the Insidious and Paranormal Activity movies, just because they were, he took like a $15,000 budget and he made like I don't even know how many millions of dollars Paranormal Activity made, but like literally it was just an RE Alexa camera. And then like at this house with these two people and like blew it up. But his way of telling stories and the way that he uses people's senses to like drive the scene, especially in the lighting, is always impeccable. Camera angles, always great. How he does super wide perspective shots of having him like walking into the other room, but you already see what's in the other room. You don't know that they don't see it, but just walking that wide. And then they, I don't know how they even do like the tops. Like you ever seen like Malevolent with the, has like the demon in the girl's back of her head. Like they basically like shoot it like almost a drone shot, but she's like walking through the house. Like the camera angles that that they use like blow my mind. Those are definitely two.
Okay,
I would say for sure. Just different sides of the coin. Spike Lee as well. Just like to hear how he talks and how he does a lot of like, I would say like knowledge that not everybody does. He talks about taking care of your crew and taking care of your actresses and their actors and like how to do a lot of things that like doesn't involve a camera all the time. Dealing with people. Like he, I watched a master class that he put on. And it was just, it was awesome.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about hockey because you are a big hockey fan.
I love hockey.
And you're a CBJ fan, correct?
Yeah. So it's kind of tricky. I'm definitely a CBJ fan. Love the CBJ. Going tomorrow night, see the Canadiens. But before they were a team, I was a Kings fan. Luke Robitaille was my hockey idol, being, you know, left-handed. And so I'm left-handed. He was like the highest left, you know, highest point scoring left-hander in the league. I don't think now, but at the time.
Yeah.
But and then of course, like at that age, like they got Wayne Gretzky and Yuri Curry, and it was just like, this is the greatest thing to ever watch, like on ice at the time, because the hockey was, Wayne Gretzky slowed a game down that was not slow. It was a lot tougher then, because like now, like you went into, like if you were Wayne Gretzky going into the boards in 1993 versus now, you know you have to have little guys on your team to stop those guys from taking him out. And now, like the rule of the enforcer is obviously going to the wayside.
Oh yes, very much so. I could rant and rave about it. That it's, I don't know. I mean, the game has changed. I think that that's the reality that we all have to, as hockey fans, understand that it's changed. There are some things that are great that have changed. As a quick example, the icing rule. I think that hybrid icing rule is much better than the old school way. But I agree, you need somebody that on the team to enforce, you know, the stupid shit that goes on, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You think Tom Wilson doesn't know that there's no enforcer and he's going to cheap shot the heck out of somebody?
Yeah, because that's not a, it's not a requirement anymore.
Right.
Like you just have big, you luckily might have a big power forward that could hit sometimes.
Yeah.
Like who would you, like you couldn't even name me somebody on the Jackets now that you would call anything. Like before, like the closest I think we had before we got rid of him was like Josh Anderson.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100% on that. That is sadly part of the game that has gone away. And, you know, I know that they want to make things more marketable. You know, and having fights is not in probably, which I disagree with that. I think that makes you stand out, as if you have the enforcer who's ready to drop the gloves.
It's the only sport that had it.
Yeah.
It was like, and it's not like they overused it. No. Like a lot of people like back in the day, especially Wayne Gretzky was like, we got to stop all this fighting. I'm like, what? Where's all this fighting? Like, it wasn't like it was every, well, it depends on the teams, of course, like, especially in the playoffs, but that's granted. You see the same person for at least four games, you're going to fucking hate him. Especially if he's the guy that hit you in the boards in game two. What do you think? You're not going to go into game three and not try to take him out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just think that, but I do like the speed. I love the 3-on-3 overtime. I, like you said, the hybrid icing took away the 2-lane pass.
Yes.
Like there was a lot of things they did to fix it. Obviously to make it more offensive, to make more goal scoring, change the rink. Or not the rink, they changed the goal, and then they changed the pad, like the goalies' pads, made them smaller, but made the goalies more agile at the same time. But
true.
I would like to see what Dominic Hasek would do in today's pads.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see him do a hybrid butterfly with smaller pads. Not saying he couldn't do it because he was a dominator, but just, you know, just a rough example of like how much the game has changed from, it doesn't seem like forever, but 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. So were you disappointed a little bit with the jacket season?
No, because I think we all expected what was going to happen. Like, I think most of the people who are disappointed are the ones that thought we were going to go back to the playoffs and do everything just like we always have. And I just think if you didn't have those unrealistic expectations, you're okay. I think our defense, I think Elvis gets so much crap for not all his fault.
Yeah, I agree.
The last, was it two or three games ago? Whenever we play, this has actually been, for me, two or three games ago, not Jackets, two or three games. We played the Calgary Flames, and they beat us 6-0. They had 60-some shots, and I think it was like 59 saves from Elvis. And then, of course, whatever the equated is to 9 goals, it was 60-some goals. But, like, that's still a 9-something save percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Because that you're basing it on 60 fucking shots. There's no goalie in the NHL in anywhere that's going to take 60 shots and not let in some goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying Elvis is the greatest goaltender ever. Obviously, he has his faults. But, like, if he had the same offense that Bob had, I bet you Elvis would be a great goaltender right now. Because now we know what Bob did, obviously, when he left and went to Florida. We saw that, how that panned out.
So are you still a fan of the Kings?
Yeah, I still love the Kings.
Okay, so you're pleased with them on the West Coast.
Yeah, I still, okay. Yeah. And I think that's where the Jackets are going, right? It took the Kings several years to rebuild, and they're finally getting the young pieces into place, getting them ready to go. I think the Jackets made two really good draft picks this year, mm-hmm. the ones we just picked up, the boy from Michigan. I think he's going to be great. Really excited. I mean, he's. I think he's dressing tomorrow night. If he didn't dress last night or two nights ago.
I'm not sure. I didn't check out the game two nights ago.
They talked, like, you know, the Twitter rumors that he could dress before the season. I wouldn't dress him before the season ends, but
yeah,
take a chance of hurting him. But
funny thing that you mentioned the Kings, and I just read an article about, you know, that the Kings, you know, they won in 2014. They won in what, 2016?
No, they won 2012 and 2014.
That's right, 2012 and 2014. Yeah. They just admitted that they floundered in 2015 because they were just worn out. Like, it is just, you know, after those other 3 years of pushing. In fact, in 2013, didn't they make it to the West Finals too, I think?
Yeah, it was literally the Blackhawks, the Kings, the Blackhawks, the Kings,
yeah.
The Blackhawks.
Yeah, and this article talked about how three-peating, because everybody's talking about Tampa three-peating, but it's like it's a hard, mentally and physically, it's a hard journey to get to that third cup.
And the difference is, I think the play style is what benefits the Tampa Bay Lightning, because mm-hmm. if you think of the Kings, Daryl Sutter is like an old-school coach. These were all big hitting forwards. In the 2014 Stanley Cup, they played 127 games. That is a shit ton of games.
Yeah.
And especially when your whole MO is to be physical, literally right. to beat the other team up. It was like, I think the Blackhawks and the Kings were the last teams you're ever going to see built like that.
Yeah.
That had a couple players that were speed, but everybody else getting to the pile. Take it in the corner, hit the boards, beat these people to death. Like, that's why they got tired. That's mm-hmm. really I think Chicago probably would have panned out if they wouldn't have paid Taves and Kane all that money, but they couldn't afford to buy anybody else for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. What are your hopes for the Jackets next year? Shore up that defense, probably.
Yeah, shore up that defense. Let's see how our young goal scorers pan out. I'm still not sold on Larson.
Oh, really?
Coach. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. The problem is I equate Tortorella. God, I can see his face. Who is the coach that we had in 2009? Ken Hitchcock.
Ken Hitchcock.
The same style where it was just, you're a two-way player no matter how you play. You're always mm-hmm. going to play defense. You're always going to lay down the line every single shift. And I think that we have a lot of players that don't play that style. Just like in 2009, you had his whole Ken Hitchcock, you had like Filatov, Zhirdev, mm-hmm. players that were basically figure skaters to Ken Hitchcock. Like, if you can't take a hit, And if you can't lay down and take the puck to your face, you're worthless. And Tortorella was kind of that same no bullshit, blue line. You're going to take it every shift, the body that is. And a lot of these players just didn't. I don't think they bought into that system. And the ones who did, I think Tortorella's attitude, like Calvert, was a perfect example. Mm-hmm. Perfect two-way guy. He wasn't the greatest goal scorer, but he always was in the shit every time they asked him. I mean, that one game he had how many stitches and he came back in and scored the game-winning goal? It was like 16 stitches in his forehead or something. But he made that comment about him and like comparing him to a toilet seat or something. And then he went away because I guess he did, you know, he just didn't like that he said that. But
yeah.
Larson's more of like a friendly coach. But I just don't feel like a lot of the younger guys have hit that discipline mark. That's why I say I'm not sold on him, because I don't know if it's just them at their age or if it's Brad Larson's coaching. Because, I mean, he coached the AHL team for a long time and then came up and did the assistant coach and now the head coach. I mean, we got a lot of bright spots as far as, like, the possibility. We could do whatever we wanted if we could get – I feel like we're always that team that's one or two pieces away. Just like we were when we were making the playoffs every other year.
You think re-signing Line A long-term would be a good way to go?
If he wants to stay here.
Okay.
Okay. Because like part of me thinks he wants to, part of me thinks he doesn't. To me, to be honest, like it blows my mind. Like with Panarin and Bob, they're here at the Jackets. They're getting paid premium money. You're a fucking rock star here. Like people love you. But you want to go to like New York. I guess Bob going to Florida was purely a money move, but like
Panarin
going to New York where nobody really knows who you are. But like you went from being like they had Russian vodka billboards with you on it. You were on on buildings, you were everywhere. Everybody knew who you were. Just sacrifice it for some money.
Well, the rumor always I heard too was girlfriend was not happy to be in Columbus.
She could go somewhere else.
You're making that much money. You could take weekend trips to New York City. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Just go. But I just I never get it. Like, and a lot of people hate Yarmo and Davidson for going all in that year, you know, when we got Duchesne and we picked up everybody. Like, that's what we should have done. Like, I had no qualms about that. Like, this is the one chance everybody was always bitching that we're never going to fucking go far in the playoffs. And then he did everything he could and it just didn't work out. Like it just, that's hockey.
Exactly. Absolutely. All right. Let's wrap up with one other last question here, Thomas. Give me your opinion. Why is Columbus a great place to be creative and to create art?
I think it's a great place because it's up and coming. Like I feel that Columbus is just now getting to the point where we're getting seen by bigger companies, right? So Facebook comes here, Amazon's coming here. We're getting the biggest chip factory in the United States coming here, right? Fashion people are starting to notice this place, right? Limited's here, obviously. I think that if you come here and you put in the work, not saying tomorrow, but you have the chance to at least either one or two things. You're going to have the blueprint for success to go to another market for a while. Or it's just going to be built here to where you're going to be successful because of all the people. It's a great collaborative community. Everybody supports each other. That's another thing that we love about here. We have constant meetups, Facebook groups, right? We have fashion shows where newer models come and check out things. There's mixers. There's art galleries. You have the Short North, right? You have Franklinton. You have like Old Town East. You have all these areas that are just really thirsting for art, thirsting for culture, thirsting, especially after COVID, right? Everybody's looking for life to come back to normal. And I feel like Columbus has, it literally has the recipe to be a much bigger, better, more influential city than it is. And I think that we're getting there.
It's cool.
We're not in LA yet or New York yet, but you know, who knows?
We're getting there.
I could see Columbus doing huge things.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about where folks can find you on the internet, talk about some upcoming projects and whatnot, Thomas. So where can folks find you if they want to look up what you're doing?
Well, they can find me on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all the fun stuff. Thomas Angeletti on all of them. ThomasAngeletti.com for more of the photography stuff, and then awesomefilms.com for the film stuff. And that's about it. I have a TikTok, can't use it, can't figure it out. still learning that one. I gotta have help. You can find me on there, but I don't know what you're gonna find. Who knows? Videos of my cat.
You know what? That's okay, man. You know, you'll eventually figure it out, man. You figured out how to use that camera without any type of autofocus and that. You'll figure out TikTok.
Yeah, it's just like a camera, right?
Yeah, there you go.
I just got to learn all the dances and stuff.
There you have it. All right. With that, Thomas, thank you very much, man, for spending some time with me tonight. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You're quite welcome. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Thomas Angeletti, talking about Perdition and all of his other microfilm projects that he has going on, and just all the other projects in general that he has going on. I will say this, and I know you might think I'm biased, but his actual website where his photography stuff is showcased is gorgeous. I really mean that. The dude is super talented. Support him if you get the opportunity to do so. Definitely follow him. And thank you, Thomas, for coming on the PVDcast. I appreciate it. All right, now here's where you can let me know what you think about this episode, or any episode for that matter. You can get in touch with me a variety of ways. You can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. But you can also shoot me an email if you like. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. And you can even leave me a message over on the Facebook or Instagram feeds. Just look for @PVDcast. And if you want to let folks know where they can hear the PVDcast, well, there's a bunch of different avenues for that as well. I mean, obviously, I have it on all those major podcasting platforms. All you have to do is go into the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. Or you can go on over to PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly, where all the episodes live. But either way, please make sure that you help spread the word. And if you listen to an episode through, say, Spotify or Stitcher Radio or Apple Podcasts or whatever, please make sure that you rate and review. It helps me out so much. You can give me as many stars as you want, however many you think I deserve. And you can just leave a simple comment like really good or awesome episode. You don't have to write like a giant sentence or a paragraph or a book for that matter. Just please help me out by rating and reviewing. And don't forget to subscribe as well, because that will make sure that you never miss an episode of my fantastic podcast. I also like to do something on Monday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that is do a little Facebook broadcast. Another easy way to get this podcast in your ears. Just go over to the Facebook page. Once again, that's @PVDcast. On Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can hear the episode. You can ask me questions or make comments if you like, and I will respond. It's great fun, so you definitely should check it out. Once again, Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at the Facebook page of the PVDcast. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you once again for checking out this episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2022.